Today, we issue the final report of the Whitewater Committee. After 14 months of work, 52 hearings, and taking testimony from more than 260 witnesses, we have discovered a very troubling and continuing pattern of the abuse of power. And each time an abuse is revealed, the White House delivers excuses, memory lapses, and changed stories. Time and time again, the White House seems unable to give the American people the truth on the first or even the second try. Throughout our hearings, this disturbing pattern was seen again and again. Former Treasury Chief of Staff Josh Steiner, confronted with damaging evidence in his own handwriting, claimed that he was not telling the truth to his own diary. Margaret Williams, Chief of Staff to the First Lady, Hillary Rodham Clinton, told a White House employee, Tom Castleton, that she was moving a box of papers from Vincent Foster's office to the resident so that the President and First Lady could review them. Confronted by Mr. Castleton's testimony, Ms. Williams dismissed him as a mere intern. Former Deputy Attorney General Philip Hyman testified that he bitterly criticized White House Counsel Bernard Nussbaum for breaking his word, asking, quote, "Bernie, are you hiding something?" Nussbaum did not remember this most memorable conversation. Susan Thomas's close friend and advisor to the First Lady couldn't recall being at the White House for nearly 6 hours on the very day Vince Foster's note was eventually turned over to investigators. Harold Dickies, White House Deputy Chief of Staff, saying in a Whitewater Defense Team meeting that one of the career Justice Department's official was effing us blue, tried to suggest that that phrase was complimentary to the official for doing an effective job. And Mark Geerin, the former White House communications director who attended the same Whitewater defense meeting and took the notes, saying that effing us blue meant that the Justice Department official was, quote, a tough guy. April Breslau, an RTC official in Kansas City, who testified that she didn't recognize her own voice on a tape trying to prompt investigator Gene Lewis into softening her conclusions. History will judge these hearings as a revealing insight into the workings of an American presidency that misused its power, circumvented the limits on its authority, and attempted to manipulate the truth. We have had hundreds of hours of testimony with key administration officials forgetting important facts, not recalling major events, and repudiating their own notes and diaries. We have seen members of the administration or close associates of the Clintons convicted, indicted, or forced to resign from public office. We have witnessed a pattern of deception and arrogance that undermines the fundamental core of the American democratic system. Our job was to search for the truth, to do so in a fair and impartial and thorough manner. And that's what we've done. I'm proud of the men and women who worked along with this committee to reveal the truth. These hearings succeeded in helping the American people to see more clearly the events that are today called Whitewater. Many other events have emerged since these hearings began, and the pattern continues. Most notably, we have had Travelgate, the firing and attempted destruction of the lives of Billy Dale and 6 other individuals. And in the past 2 weeks, we've begun to learn about Filegate, the systematic abuse of the most private files of individuals held by the FBI. These acts reveal a pattern of the misuse of awesome power of government and a potential threat to the most fundamental rights of privacy and common decency. Whitewater appears to have been neither the beginning nor the end of a pattern of administration misbehavior that should never occur in a free society. Therefore, it is important that the American people have the testimony, read this report, and understand its conclusions. Senator Bond.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Our first effort in the Banking Committee, as I recall, to find out about Whitewater came in February of 1994. Then second in command at the Treasury, Roger Altman, came before us. He was serving as the head of the RTC at that time. One of the questions I asked of him was, when did you tip off the White House? He told us that he hadn't tipped off the White House about the criminal referral. It was not until several weeks later that the Washington Post revealed the fact that there had been a tip-off that he stated, yes, maybe he had, because he had directed his counsel, Gene Hansen, to brief the White House. In the fall of 93, previously, he had faxed information on criminal referrals to Bernie Nussbaum. Had Mr. Altman been under oath at the time, rather than just appearing before the committee, he would be facing perjury charges today. After the second tip-off about the criminal referral, the U.S. Attorney, Paula Casey, in Little Rock, declined to proceed. It was not until, again, the newspaper report of this action that the matter was revived. We have seen a consistent pattern of interference, efforts to cover up, to spy on, to gain improper information on the investigations of what went on in Arkansas, and we have seen a failure and inability of representatives of the White House and other agencies to tell the truth when asked questions about their behavior.
It's somewhat ironic, I find, that these hearings started with a phrase from Josh Steiner when he said that Roger Altman gracefully ducked a question. That was some time ago, close to 2 years. Now it looks like we're going to end the hearings with Ms. Clinton gracefully ducking. Although she isn't quite as graceful a ducker as was Roger Altman. She was asked a question, and it was a very simple question. I'll read it. We request that she state any knowledge she may have concerning the Rose Law Firm billing records, including whether she had reviewed, handled, or discussed these records and her knowledge relating to the appearance or discovery of these records. In other words, we ask her flat and cold, did you touch, handle, read these records in your office on the third floor of the White House or in the book room? Did you handle, touch, or read? Simple and flat. An answer under oath. What we got was this. I do not know how the billing records came to be identified by Ms. Huber at the White House, although I have read various media accounts. If ever I heard a vague, nothing answer to a direct question, that was a nothing answer. The records were produced to the special counsel and other investigative agencies within 24 hours of the identification. I don't know what identification means, but I ask here today again to Ms. Clinton, did you and will you state under oath, read, touch, or use the billing records while they were in the possession of the third floor of the White House in your office of the book room? I think this is a pertinent question, and I think it's certainly fitting that Ms. Clinton should come forth and answer that one simple question for the committee.
I said from the beginning, several months ago, that there were certain parallels between this administration's behavior and the Nixon administration's behavior some 22, 23 years ago. And I think most of you see some of it more each day. I'm going to focus just for a few minutes on the what happened after Vince Foster's death, the night and the morning afterwards. When the White House counsel, Mr. Nussbaum, can thwart, impede an investigation by the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Hyman, and the FBI, and some other criminal investigations, that goes a long way. I believe this was a concerted effort on the part of the White House to keep the Justice Department and the investigative arm of the FBI from getting to the records, because they didn't know what was there or they feared different things. I also believe that there's evidence, and it will be up to now to the independent counsel, the special prosecutor, to the press, and the American people to make the final judgment, probably in that order. But there's evidence of obstruction of justice by Mr. Nussbaum, a probable obstruction of justice, and also perjury by Mr. Nussbaum, Mrs. Maggie Williams, and obviously Mrs. Thomas's. There might be others, but ultimately that will be the call of the grand jury and the special investigator. But make no bones about it. There was a concerted effort here by this administration to impede, obstruct this investigation, not to cooperate with this committee, probably not to cooperate with any form with the independent counsel. And you're seeing more and more of it, and I believe you're going to see more in the future ahead. Thank you.
2 points. Number one, it seems that the quality of the witness's memory is in inverse proportion to that witness's proximity to the Clintons. The folks who were career employees of the Park Service, the Justice Department, the Secret Service, or the various agencies in Arkansas who had no close proximity to the Clintons, had clear memories, told us what happened, became very specific in their recollection of events. The closer the witness got to the Clintons, the more they had difficult memories. They couldn't be refreshed even when presented with notes of meetings that they had attended. They just couldn't remember anything. If there are two clear threads running through this report, the majority report depends upon the memories of the career employees. The minority report agrees with the lack of memory on the part of the people that were close to the Clintons. I think that summarizes for me my reaction to this whole circumstance. Second point, when faced with difficult information, the reaction on the White House has been attack the messenger. They have attacked the chairman of this committee. They have attacked the special prosecutor. And over the weekend, they attacked Mr. Denton, who came forward with his memory of what happened in the conversation that Mrs. Clinton cannot recall. I think that point must be also kept in mind as we're assessing the work of this committee. We must make our conclusions on the basis of what the report says and not attack ad hominem the people who are involved in writing it. And those are the 2 points that I'm taking from this experience and that I think the American people should keep firmly in mind as they review this work.
It is unfortunate that the White House has chosen to unleash personal attacks instead of facing up to the truth about Whitewater. The committee's report makes it clear this administration believed evasion and obstruction were more important than the truth. The administration was involved in a highly orchestrated effort to keep the facts from the American people in the intricate web of deceit and abuse of power that is Whitewater. As the administration spins itself dizzy, attacking the messenger, the American people won't forget that an impartial jury has already found former Clinton associates guilty on 24 counts in the Whitewater affair. Considering the half-truths, weak memories, and evasive tactics by the Clintons' closest and brightest associates, the committee's job of finding the truth was not easy. Despite the obstacles, the Whitewater Committee report is thorough and complete.
I just wanted to comment that there has been one central figure that has been a major player in all three phases of this investigation, from the Vince Foster hours after his death to the Washington investigation to the events in Arkansas, and that one person has been Hillary Rodham Clinton. If you look at her central participation in the dealings with Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan, Casa Grande, and other things dealing with Whitewater projects and the failed savings and loan, you go to the White House and the investigation of billing records finding their way to the third floor into the book room of the White House, the central figure and likely person is Hillary Clinton. And the hours immediately following the death of Vince Foster, between Hillary Clinton, her chief of staff, Maggie Williams, her close friend and confidant, Susan Thomas's, and Bernie Nussbaum, more than 20 phone calls were exchanged in that 48-hour period of time that led to a series of phone calls that a concerted effort to prevent investigators from having, in Mrs. Clinton's own words, unfettered access to the documents in Foster's office. So I think we have pretty clear indications of one central figure that has been a major part of this investigation stretching from Arkansas all the way to Washington. And that one person, and a lot of unanswered questions, is Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's unfortunate, in my opinion, that the White House has chosen to attack Senator D'Amato as the messenger rather than address the substance of this committee. But I would like to remind the American people that there is not one messenger. There are 10 messengers. They all agree. Senators D'Amato, Shelby, Bond, Mack, Faircloth, Bennett, Grams, Murkowski, Hatch, and myself. It's pretty difficult for the White House to claim that in some way this effort is tainted because of the messenger. When you stand these 10 senators up, I think they stand up alongside of any senator, any of the 100, in terms of their honesty, their integrity, their commitment to good government, and their dedication in this instance to find the truth. For those who choose to think this is not much, I suggest that they peruse the 800 pages that lay out the facts underlying this committee's conclusions in great detail. I don't choose today to go through them, other than I think you get a glimpse of what we've been through when you understand that for those who say this investigation has uncovered no wrongdoing, there have been 33 convictions related to Whitewater and Madison Guarantee. They include the former Attorney General Hubbell, sitting Arkansas Governor Jim Guy Tucker, and I think we all know the rest of those who have been indicted and found guilty. In essence, as I see this situation, the Whitewater has truly been about an abuse of power in Arkansas and in Washington. Anyone who takes time to read the report and piece together the evidence will conclude, at the very least, that the President, the First Lady, their associates, and their administration have engaged in some highly questionable legal conduct. Again, I commend Chairman D'Amato and the committee staff and this dedicated committee of Democrats and Republicans for what they have accomplished and what they're reporting to the American people today.
When you re-examine and look at the travel office problems, people who have served both Republican and Democrat White Houses, what's happened at Whitewater and the investigation and the hearings and the conclusions there, and now the X-Files, where the over 400 files that have been accumulated by the White House by basically political operatives. There's only one phrase that can describe this, and that's the arrogance of power. Now, at midnight last night, the special committee released a report on, detailed report on Whitewater matter. As a member of the special committee, I stand by this report. The facts are in, and the Clintons' involvement in the scandal is really undeniable. The 24 convictions, late arrests, those baseless political charges attacking Ken Starr. We watched as he was attacked viciously in the media, with virtually everybody in the media knowing what a fine person he is, what a good judge he has been, what an excellent lawyer he is, and what a straight shooter he is. But in all honesty, those were baseless political charges attacking Ken Starr or any legitimate inquiry for the facts. Crimes were committed. Now there are 33 convictions of 12 people to date by Ken Starr. Questions do remain. They may never be answered. How did Mrs. Clinton's Rose Law Firm billing records mysteriously appear in the White House reading room, and who put them there? The answer to this question is not just an insignificant whodunit. These records have been under subpoena by the independent counsel for almost 2 years. Were these records in Vincent Foster's office when he died? And were they removed by the First Lady's assistants in order to conceal them from federal investigators? Legitimate questions. The Whitewater affair appears to be the classic story of unscrupulous dealings intended to benefit the politically elite in Arkansas, and an effort to bury the truth when questions were raised. And now they've carried over to Washington as we've watched the spectacle of these hearings and the spectacle of people who testify. The White House's delay in cooperating with the investigation produced the need to extend the special committee's lifespan. Subpoenaed documents mysteriously turn up 2 years later. Now, when the verdict is finally in, the White House attempts to divert attention from the substance of this 827-page report, instead responding to the conclusions of the special committee, instead of responding to the conclusions. I noticed where they attacked Gene Lewis. Gene Lewis was the one who made the original criminal referrals that have resulted in the convictions down there in Arkansas. I was offended at the way they attacked her when she was a witness. But the fact of the matter is, her work has been vindicated. Why must the White House continue its sleazy attacks on Senator D'Amato, who has, in my opinion, done a very fair and an excellent job? I don't think that's in dispute. And he was given this very difficult task it was a complicated task in untangling Whitewater, which is very, very difficult to untangle. I think it's now time for the American people to decide if there has been any wrongdoing and cover-up, and it's up to the American people to make that conclusion. If the White House disagrees with this special committee's conclusions, I ask that substance be their focus, that they focus their efforts on substance, not on attacking individuals, and certainly not the messenger. I think Senator D'Amato, the committee staff, and others on the committee, members, have come through with a detailed and balanced account of what Whitewater is. There are some questions that will never be answered, it seems to me. But you cannot help but look at this and say, there's a lot that occurred here that was wrong.